Hey friends, I'm doing a bit of a shake-up of this podcast soon. In the very next episode, I'm going to be joined by my friend, John Anthony, and we're going to do a little kind of occasional pop-up mini-series called Kindred Spirits, in which I am effectively just hanging out with a friend, having a whiskey, and talking shop. If you've ever wanted to hear or eavesdrop into what it sounds like when you have two... facilitator, complexity practitioners, speaker folks get together and talk shop. Well, you're going to like that episode. But in this episode, I really wanted to sneak something out because there's this important trend emerging where I've had multiple friends. Well, here's the scenario. I know someone who's really cool, really cool. I'm in conversation with them. I'm like, gosh, damn, the way you think, I love it. Or you have the poetic sensibilities, or I want to connect with you. And invariably when I ask, like, how can we keep in touch? Like, how can I keep up to date with your latest? These days, a lot of folks will send you to, connect with my LinkedIn profile or find me on Instagram. And it's just unfortunate because if I connect with those folks on these centralized platforms, there's no guarantee that the algorithm will dish me up what they're serving. And my real deeper yearning is that they have a newsletter list or some sort of, you know, little independent site on their own accord where I can actually connect with them. And if they share something, I'm not going to miss it because I'll get the email in my inbox. And a few friends are like, it's never really... always wish, yeah, I wish I had set up a newsletter 10 years ago and so on. And as someone who has for the last 15 or so years, without growth hacking at all, but just quietly tending to the newsletter, I find it personally one of the most wholesome things, even though I've been a little bit distracted in the past few years. It's where I'm orientating towards, and I'm so excited for other folks to join me in this. But where I see most folks go is just setting up a Substack. Which is a small step in the right direction. But in this episode, it's really in the next half hour, I want to imploringly share some avenues into a more wholesome web. Right now, and I've been in this space for quite a while, it's the landscape's shifting all over the place. There's no steady platform to be on. We have been in a platform economy. We've also had institutions before that, but now because of artificial intelligence essentially ransacking all of the copyright, now everyone's a genius expert because of their personal AI, and now because everything is gamified and people are seeking to become double sellouts and obtain ever more influence and reach. We're optimizing ourselves to oblivion. Everything seems to have become subjected to shitification and slop. And there are some of us that are seeking a more wholesome alternative. And if that's you, this episode is for you. So let's just look at the current landscape. Centralized or Web 2 platforms. Do you know what I mean when I say Web 2? Let me explain this. Web 1 is a kind of a time that most of us pine for, and it's partly where I'm going to get to with this. Web 1 was a time of innocence, of naivete, of independent, personal, kooky websites with terrible font legibility and contrast and backgrounds, but it was so wholesome, and people would have personal blogs, and they'd share lovely, wholesome updates, and it was done so in ways where you would visit folks whose thinking and writing you really loved and admired, or you just thought it was like a cool, quirky character, and you'd get your updates that way. And then Web 2 came along with its platform. So Web 1 was kind of like read-only. People would write stuff up if you had the web savvy. And then Web 2 came along, and platforms made it easier to write and share as well as read. And this also became captured by centralized platforms that offered a product so good, and there were network effects, it was frictionless and easy, and then suddenly you're exposed to new people, and there were legitimately some exciting things that emerged from this. But because it was platform design process and not protocol design process, protocol being a way of coordinating with collective ownership and responsibility at the same time, There's a whole world of protocol development. You can check out the Summer of Protocols, where some folks are beginning to think there. I think most of them are missing the point, though. There are deeper indigenous protocols that have been that has helped some of the, you know, longest, most contiguous cultures, living cultures, navigate all sorts of complexity and calamity because of good coordination protocols. Protocols is where it's at. We're going to land back on this point. But these Web 2 platforms came along, the Facebooks, the you know, now Meta with Instagram and so on. You've got LinkedIn. You've got these areas that give you a whole bunch of convenience, but then over time you realize that you become ensnared and entrapped within this platform. And ultimately, you're the product. They are harvesting your data. They are making you contort yourself into ever more undignified forms in order to dance to the whims of the algorithm and do whatever abasements to appease it in the exchange for reach. And there's censorship and surveillance absolutely baked in. So if you happen to be an advocate for international human rights laws, if you happen to be critical of countries that are killing children, then you will suffer consequences as a result of that. And for a lot of us that have been in this game for a while, you'll post something and it just, I mean, even I can feel the allure, almost the siren call, the hypnotic call. For example, on LinkedIn, posts that are selfies, posts that are upbeat, posts that are kind of just good vibe, sentiment casting, they tend to do relatively well. But posts that have people think a little bit, that are a little bit constructively critical about some existing power structures, posts that evoke some of the anti-memes that I talked of in the last episode, things that even question the very paradigm we're in. Of course, I don't go in. Of course, most people aren't, you know, it's not on their radar. There's the anti-memetic effect that I was talking about last time, but it's just interesting. By participating on these platforms, the way that we shape and see things is also influenced. I'd note the same thing that you need to be very concerned with when it comes to how you groom your artificial intelligences. I was very naively enthusiastic about artificial intelligence when it first came out with OpenAI, when they were open, and when it seemed to be like a public good endeavor. As I've mentioned before, I had worked with strategic innovation teams exploring artificial intelligence, but this was before the catalyst of the large language models and the graphic processing that enabled us to reap the benefits of what we're seeing today. But now, since it's come to light that these large language models have been trained on all of our inputs without necessarily having any of our permissions, and when OpenAI went closed and for profit and so on, I've become very wary. And at the moment, I'm seeing folks that are very under the spell of artificial intelligence. There is this thing, there's an article from my friend Peter Lindbergh that I'll include in this episode show notes that you can find over at foxwizard.com/E5, I believe, or maybe it's E6. Where if we relate to the possibilities of entities in terms of artificial intelligence or self-organizing complex intelligences, and if we look at the effects of what happens when there's a mirroring of input and how that can radicalize and ossify and send us into a cul-de-sac, we need to be very wary, keep our wits about us big time. For example, if you have a misogynist start to use artificial intelligence and the way that their tone and framing frames questions, and the fact that we have confirmation bias, and the fact that you now have this entity that can mirror and affirm and give you positive, encouraging reinforcement and make you feel understood, that, you know, individually probably feels great. Individually, we're seeing a lot of people become AI evangelists. The artificial intelligence itself, the in inverted quotes, the entities are, well, the Shoggoths are effectively converting folks to the cause. And some folks are down with this. They're like, yes, this is all about, you know, this may be the end of biological life, and where our role as humans here is not as custodial species, but to bring about the birth of synthetic intelligence. And we need to accelerate this, maximize the entropy in the system. And other people are like, this is deeply concerning. I don't think we're ready for this. And perhaps our intelligence has outpaced our wisdom. And so I think I had a deeper point there, but I got swept up. My main thing here is beware. Beware how the tools that we use have a skeuomorphic effect on us. Just like if you go wandering about with a camera, suddenly you'll start to perceive things through the camera's lens. If you're walking around with a field recorder for sound because you're looking to get sound samples, you'll have a greater acuity for sounds. And, you know, I keep saying, keep your wits about you. The tools that we're using are shaping us. And, you know, the move right now is very much like a rogue. If you are a rogue, one of the advantages of a rogue is that you're not flat-footed. You actually have a bonus on initiative. If you are keeping your wits about you, when the platforms are unsteady, you lower your center of gravity, you extend your hands out, you extend your fingertips out, you're extending your ability to sense and attune to weak signals, and thus to be able to nimbly orientate towards relevance realization. And that means keeping your wits about you so that you don't become entrapped and ensnared either by audience capture, algorithmic capture, or by the allure of an AI that mirrors your desires back to you and has you convinced that that you are more special than you are. Of course, you are more special than you are. We're all more special than we are. That's the thing. So anyway, centralized platforms, be wary. That just last night, and the reason I'm here with you rushing this podcast out is because I saw a TED presentation by Carol Cadwalader. I don't know if I'm saying the name right. Carol Cadwalader. Carol was an investigative journalist who exposed the Facebook Cambridge Analytica scandal a ways back. And her recent TED talk, which came out just a few days ago, is a must watch, in my opinion. And it's been a long time since I've recommended a TED talk. TED has become a bit of a parody of itself, but I wouldn't say I'm optimistic, but I'm pleased that they're allowing for someone like Carol to share a presentation like she did. I have no doubt I just think it was a bold move because she was incredibly critical of centralized platforms, of Sam Altman and OpenAI and where we are right now. And the beautiful thing is, you know, I was so excited after seeing this presentation. I then went to watch another one, and I was immediately reminded why I've stopped watching TED Talks, because the one that followed was this overly polished, you know, histrionic, perfect, smooth presentation with all of the kind of right beats of the narrative, and it was just felt too optimized. But Carol's presentation was so heartfelt. She's been through such a rough time as a result of what she calls the broligarchy, like the tech bro oligarchy. And she points to some very important things happening with centralized platforms. It was appalling. And, you know, even myself, I was chatting with a bunch of friends last night, sharing this presentation with them, saying, this is an absolute must watch. Please, can we take the conversation to Signal rather than, you know, smoke signaling this as Timothy Snyder, the author of Against Tyranny or something like that, whose book is just, we got the illustrated version of Timothy Snyder's book. And, you know, all the signs of this slipping into tyranny, authoritarianism, fascism, it's all seemingly happening right now. And what Carol's making the point here is this: we're living in amidst the coup. The democracy that we have loved, the democracy that we have worked with, that is the least shitty of all government systems, seemingly. I think there was a book a while ago, there was The Silent Coup, which talks about how corporations have effectively taken over democracy. We're seeing this now with the tech bros. She makes allusions to Russian influence here. It's just something to pay attention to. I mean, a lot of people I know, they just want to carry on and, you know, watch their reels and collect a few likes and, you know, carry on in their day to 10x their productivity or whatnot. But for those of us who, you know, kind of care and who have had grandparents that fought for democratic rights, I mean, I don't know, I'm not a patriot person, but I do hope that we can cultivate some sort of planetary mutualism, some sort of globally life-affirming, you know, as in by that I mean it's like something supportive of the flourishing of all life. At the moment, we're on a self-terminating path that exploits life to the nth degree. So anyway, I guess what I'm suggesting here is the current pathway on is heinous. It's happening right now. We need to pay attention and we need to be thoughtful and considered about how we engage in centralized platforms. Thus, when I have friends say, well, maybe Substack is the answer, I would say it is a small step in the right direction. Substack is what I would consider to be a Web 2.5 thing. It's not Web 3. Web 3 is where you have collective ownership. And of course, Web 3 is fraught with issues and you really need to keep your wits about you there. But the underlying premise of Web 3 is how can we take the best of Web 1 and not make the mistake of Web 2, which is where payment and incentives were obfuscated, but instead to make it upfront and clear so that there is investment back into the protocol itself so that people can be incentivized to maintain the protocol. A lot of protocols at the moment rely upon goodwill alone, and that is a good foundation. But in order to bolster things against corporate takeovers, we kind of need to be mindful of that element too. Web3, I'll talk about that a little bit. This is not a Web3 podcast, but I do think there's something about sufficiently decentralized social media protocols. Substack is not that. It's Web 2.5. It's still centralized. It's still dudes backed by Silicon Valley VCs. And so if you're worried about centralized platforms and you're worried about algorithms influencing things and you kind of want to, you know, cultivate your own wholesome patch of the internet, jumping to Substack is not what I would recommend, but I will be pragmatic at some point in this podcast. The model of Substack has power laws baked into it. So the network effects means that the followers and likes tend to concentrate into their highest earning publications. And Substack originally had this great incentive program where they incentivized and paid prominent writers to move to the platform. That then had a cultural kind of vortex pool. Now those writers are, you know, are conveniently ensconced within platform. They're earning quite a bit because of the way that Substack's network effects funnel subscribers to them. I don't think it's, you know, I read people's Substacks, I guess. A lot of people that I respect and admire deeply are on Substack. And sometimes, you know, the thing that's alive in me is this kind of inner conflict between the idealist who wants to be pure and neutral good and the pragmatist who wants to be very slightly pragmatic. Well, who wants to be pragmatic, like kind of, I was going to say neutral evil, just slightly evil, you know, just slightly self-serving. And so this battle goes on within me. And the thing is, I was on Substack very early. I thought they were doing a fantastic thing. They were offering a real alternative, a platform distinguished from, say, Medium, where you could actually collect and keep the emails of people who subscribe to your newsletter and subscribe to your writing. But then Substack went the path of the social media platform. And whilst they are better than the Web 2 versions of social media platforms, and you can keep emails, all of the signs of entrapment and enshittification are there. And the reason I left is that a writer, a poet that both Kim and I admire, Yin Yi, wrote a post just highlighting how unsafe Substack was for trans writers or for anyone who is effectively in the peripheral precariat. And in fact, Substack has experienced a fair bit of criticism for Nazi publications. I don't like anti-Semites. I don't like Nazis. I don't like fascists. I don't like folks that have a disposition where they want to wield power over others and be greater than others and so on. At the same time, I can empathize with the fact that Substack don't want to wade into the moderation thing, because then who gets to decide? And then you're effectively just replicating the same issue as before. The result being is that Substack is, much like the open web, a largely unsafe space if you don't happen to fall within the hegemony of normative standards, which for someone like me, who mostly works in the space of emergent thinking, which is mostly amidst the liminal, it means that most of the best thinkers and sense makers are not on the platform, but some still are. So anyway, I'm deeply conflicted. I think Anil Dash, who's been very critical about Substack, with this wonderful article, don't call it your Substack. He says, Substack is just a reminder, a political project made by extremists with a goal of normalizing a radical, hateful agenda by co-opting well-intentioned creators' work in service of cross-promoting attacks on the vulnerable. So as I said, I left early. I'm, you know, my personal house words are first to leave. I'm a bit sensitive to this stuff. I don't want to be complicit in that which perpetuates harm, even though I'm full of contradictions and I continue to do that. I feel a small responsibility in my actions in terms of how I show up and what I cultivate. So I left Substack for Ghost, a not-for-profit, open-source, independent web platform that is a very wholesome alternative that many of the people I respect and admire are on there. At the same time, I just want to point out this tension between me, the kind of neutral evil and the neutral good in me. I have chaotic neutral parts of me. I don't really have many lawful parts. I'm not very, there's not very little white matter in this fellow. It's still a conflict. I'm still baffled by how effective the network effects, the power laws, the convenience, and all that is of Substack. And so, where I'm going to go here is because I know a lot of folks don't necessarily have a large following already, and Substack offers a free, simple, convenient way for you to spin up a publication. I'm going to offer some alternatives that may be somewhat practical for you, but you, dear friend, who asked me the question, I just remembered I'm answering a question from a friend, well, from several friends. How do I get started with this? I don't want to just say to people, find me on LinkedIn or find me on Instagram or whatever it is. I want or God forbid, find me on Twitter. I want, to help people cultivate their own patch of the internet. Now, the reason I use Ghost is, in addition to being not-for-profit, open source, independent, I really like the CEO, how he shows up, and just the sensibilities that are baked into it all. They're also experimenting with ActivityPub, which is a social part of the social web. It's a protocol that allows for decentralized network effects. It's still very early days, but I think this is the mid to long-term play. If you're looking just for short wins, you can go optimize a Substack. You can read all the hacks of how to kind of attract your first 1,000 subscribers and, all of those things. But I just beware. Optimization is effective. The end state of optimization is slop. Most of the slop that we see, which is content created by artificial intelligence that's optimized for winning in these algorithmic contexts, the reason it is slop is because it is optimized. And what I'm advocating for here is bringing back a wholesome, weird, authentic, independent web that is threaded together via open protocols, like social protocols. Now, we're not there yet. But this is what we're cultivating here. It's kind of like Web One, the spirit of Web One before it was corrupted by platform economics, with some of the more emergent technologies. I don't know if we call it Web Three or not, but there's sufficiently decentralized social media protocols. Blue Sky, Farcaster examples. There's something even better, which I'll get to, which is effectively hanging out in real life. But the solution of what I'd suggest here is, first of all, build your temple on your own land. And by that, I mean, if you can, spin up a Ghost publication or Beehive or any of the other independent platforms that you feel comfortable with. There's micro.blog. I'll include a few links to some of the platforms that I love and admire. But do it on your own land. That is, you buy your own domain name. You'll have to pay maybe $10 or $20 a year, or you can get a cool .xyz domain name. You can run it under a pseudonym. You don't need your actual name. In this day and age, it's probably better not to have your actual name. So I have foxwizard.com, as you know. I have drjasonfox.com, which is my Web 2 persona for sneaking into enterprise land. Yeah, so get yourself a domain. Then get started on something like Ghost. Now, you can purchase a theme. You can roll your own. If you just invest, like, say, okay, I'm just going to spend this day, I'm going to spin it up myself, you can do this. Or I can connect you with a friend that I use. Sorry, not a friend that I use. A wonderful person who has offered me support in my own publication. I can connect you with her and, you know, for a small fee, she can help you spin it up. Then you'll have a place for your writing to live. Maybe you have an old WordPress website. I'm still a little skeptical of Squarespace as the, you know, platform for your website. I think there are dependencies there. Where are we going with this, by the way, is more of a lunapunk vibe. I think there's this naivety of solarpunk, which tends to rely on a kind of strong democratic government, and it's very eco-modernist. I don't think that's the future we're going to, but lunapunk still has a possibility. I'll share a video on that in the show notes. But build your temple on your own land. Now, look, you may have your temple in the middle of a dark forest, at the top of a ridge. That's very hard for people to find and access. And it may feel like when you're posting things there, no one's coming to visit. You're wondering, what are you doing? That's okay. And it's kind of cool in a way to actually find the secret temple, the actual place where people can sign up and subscribe to your newsletters. It's a nice boon for people that do find you. The thing is, though, that's not the only place, because if you've got your temple there, you can then go into the gated walled gardens and of the centralized platforms. You can, you know, go to this sterile corporate land of LinkedIn and set up a little shrine there. And the shrine is where your followers go to get a sense of what you're up to. And that's not the same as having folks come to your temple, but it's a way that people, you still have some sort of reach. Now, I'm increasingly going to wean myself off. I gave LinkedIn a good go. There are cool people on there. I like weaving mischief amidst it all. I think there is an important role of showing up and reminding folks of their infinite nature, and that we are playing the infinite game, and that they are infinite players that may have self-veiled themselves so that they've forgotten they're infinite players and they're playing finite games with, you know, a seriousness that is not merely provisional, but almost crippling. But, you know, I like going in there and weaving some fox magics. It's fun, but I don't base my practice in LinkedIn. Similarly, it's going to take me a while to shake off the it's not so much an addiction, but the habituation of Instagram. I left Facebook many, many years ago, thanks to when Jaron Lanier's book came out, 10 Arguments for Deleting Your Social Media Accounts Right Now. I think that came out in 2015. Yeah, geez, it's been 10 years, has it? Maybe it came out in 2017. I don't know, but it's been a while. All the signs are there. People have been saying, this is terrible. I think Carol from the TED Talk was saying that, like, we'll look back on, you know, what we're exposing children to in the future and be like, that is child abuse. Like, why would we do this? We're smoking this stuff and it's not good for us. But the independent web is. So you have your shrines. What I like, Yancey Strickler, who is the co-founder of Kickstarter, noticed that Yancey and MetaLabel, which is a great platform that supports creatives as a marketplace with this wonderful, quite ingenious way to automatically split payments. So when you're doing collaborative thing, you can kind of 10% to the editorial designer and 10% to the illustrator, 20% is wonderful. They've done this thing. They're on Substack quite deep. They've done this thing where they've moved all their core stuff over to Ghost, and then they're kind of just mirror posts onto Substack. And, you know, this wizard here still needs to show up in the world, and I still need to participate in the attention economy. This is how I, you know, effectively remind folks of the opportunities to venture beyond the default. And, you know, I've got my role is to oscillate, to be, you know, betwixt these worlds, and to dance amidst the liminal and so on, and to dwell in the penumbra, not quite in the full light, but not in the full shadow and so forth. So I kind of need to have a presence there. And I like what Yancey's done. And there are ways that you can set up the Substack post that you do that has the canonical link pointing back to your Ghost thing so that you still benefit from SEO, if that's even going to be a thing in this day of artificial intelligence. So, so I like that. You can be hybrid. You can be pragmatic here. You can be both neutral good and neutral evil, and thus balance it out to be merely true neutral. But where possible, though, I would try to cultivate an allergy or a distrust of centralized platforms, and an allergy and distrust of anyone who has an obscenely high follower count. I personally don't like all these gamified metrics. Substack has gone down that path where they're ranking like the top performing publications, and you know, you can see the follower count and so on. And I think that really throws people off. People are so influenced by the number glyph magic that when they see a big number or the extra zeros, people ascribe more importance and authority to that person, when really they may have just bought their list or done a whole bunch of algorithmic, you know, sucking off the algorithm every Thursday night down the corner, you know, exchange for some reach. A good practice can be at least ignoring the quantified metrics and focusing on the substance. And oh gosh, I won't rant about AI at the moment, but I really think it's important to have some cognitive defenses, as Peter Lindbergh writes of in this AI entity book. I think it's really important that we maintain some sort of cultivation of our own taste, and that we attend and tend to our own garden and ecology of information. Like, we are navigating the noosphere here, but like moths to a bright light or a bright flame, most of us are just careening to that. And then we're kind of fixed to these big artificial lights powered by slop, that are weaponized against us, that are collecting all of our information and so on. And by the way, I fully accept this is too late. Like, most of us, people around my age, have got ways, you know, they know everything about us. But that still doesn't mean we can't start cultivating the sensibilities. I really think the sensibilities in Timothy Snyder's book on tyranny are worth paying attention to. So the pathway forward, wean yourself off Web 2, wean yourself off centralized platforms. You know, eschew the antics of Web 2 platforms. Of course, that's where people still go. And there's this double bind of like the multipolar trap and the rivalrous dynamics. And if I'm not on there, then, you know, I'm missing out on the opportunities and so on. So I've got to be there, even if I don't want to be there. And everyone's thinking that. And so they're reinforcing that. I accept that. Still, you can cultivate your own practice for how you show up in these spaces. You can be intentional about how you use these platforms. It's like I don't like shopping malls. I don't like shopping malls. But I understand that people shop at shopping malls because it's convenient. All the shops are in one place. Substack is like a shopping mall, but one of those ones where they have your credit card details at the gate, and whatever you purchase and so on, they've got the details. So that's really easy to go off and buy things. And then, once you're in there, everyone's got the same kind of structure and all of that. And the thing is with Substack is you can't, you know, they own the shopping center itself. So they might be using the people that come to your store. They might be marketing to them other people's publications that are completely different ideology and philosophy you don't want them exposed to. That's not in your control. They're effectively Substack's customers. You might just happen to be able to get their email address. And look, if you're starting off, if you don't have list yet, and if you're still working on getting your first 100 followers and so on, it might make sense to just spin up a Substack publication, get a few followers, but then work towards starting your own independent publication. I understand you might have to be pragmatic. But if you can jump there sooner and then do some sort of hybrid thing or be really clever and canny, I think that's going to serve you much better in the mid to long term. Embrace Web 1 and sufficiently decentralized social media protocols, or even better, cultivate real life relationality. Like, the real counterculture is not being online at all. So go for hikes, hang out with folks in the park, like participate in the second renaissance. I think there is a wholesome thing emerging. I think that, is it the Zoomers, the younger folks, the folks, you know, in their 20s? I mean, they're all mostly still addicted to the Instagram and TikTok and so on. But there are very wholesome pockets emerging here. We just really need to cultivate some self-awareness here. I should also point out, this doesn't mean completely abandon them. I'm not a person of extremes. We need to have some sort of sense of what is emerging, but we need to keep our wits about us and be intentional. I think, remember, it is an arena. If you want to be known, you need to step into the arena. But also, remember, when you're in the arena, you're being watched. Every move, every like, every click, the amount of time you spend on looking at something before scrolling, it is all tracked, and that builds a profile of you. So you're in the arena, you're being watched, and you can also be attacked at any moment. That's how arenas work. So you have to keep your wits about you. So as I was saying, I don't think we can completely switch off, but we needn't be so enmeshed. We can look to tending to a more wholesome and independent web. And that starts with an awareness around where our attention goes. And if you are someone who wants to be known for something, or maybe that's not even the thing, you may not need to be known for something, but if you're someone who is doing a bunch of things and it's actually useful to point people to, you know, something other than a static website, something that has a kind of a currency, something that is orientated towards generosity, where if you're reading a good book, or if you went to, if you heard some great music, or if you went to see a wonderful show, you want to share that because it is an abundant, warm and lovely thing to do. If you are someone who is a professional independent consultant like myself, who sees patterns and trends that maybe are different to what is advocated by larger consulting firms, if you're seeing a trend amidst the mainstream that most others aren't seeing, you can write about it and share it, and it's going to be on your own platform, and you can do so in a way that is wholesome and authentic to you. You can, if you're someone who's concerned by the homogenizing effect that artificial intelligence is having, this kind of vortex to midwittery, this proliferation of enchitification and slop, this thing where you can actually just tell if you're paying attention, if you've been in the noosphere for a while, you know when someone has used artificial intelligence. You can hear it in the tonality, in the kind of sentence structure. If you know that's happening and you're feeling a little bit disappointed about that, you can cultivate your own blog, your own independent blog, where you just share things. You know, one of the things I love following folks whose thinking I admire, but I just think it's really cool knowing, you know, what they're into. I was recalling this post we read a while ago, which led us to purchasing our favorite mugs that made by this person who pan pottery in Byron Bay. They use local clay and just this exquisite mug. And we've had this mug, you know, broken a couple, but like had it for, I think, half a decade. The most exquisite mug. You don't find that stuff on the open web, or maybe you do, but I guess what I'm saying here is just double down on the independent, wholesome web. And beware the allure of artificial intelligence, beware the convenience and the entrapment of centralized platforms, and start your own newsletter and start your own independent website so that I can refer people to you, and so I can follow you, and so I can enrich the newsletter that I share and share some of the work that you're doing. So if you have an independent website or a little blog, I would love to hear it. I have a new email address that I've spun up, fox@foxwizard.com. Send it through to me. I'll put it on my roster. At some point, I'm thinking about cultivating a blog role or some sort of web ring or something like that. I'd love to hear from you. And in the meantime, I guess keep your wits about you is my catch call at the moment. We are in perilous times. All sorts of things are changing. I've been collapse aware for a good half a decade now. Initially, it was just intellectually. Then I started feeling it and got super depressed by it. Now I'm in a post-tragic mode. I'm not so depressed. I don't know what it is. I'm at this whole torrent of emotions, grief, but there's also plenty of room for wholesomeness and joy. So just keep your wits about you. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for the next episode, wherein I shall be having a conversation with my good friend JA, and I think you'll like it. It's a nice shift in the mode here from I've been lamenting my Cassandra role, where I'm just sitting here and talking about all the things to be worried about and concerned about and so on. It's just nice to shift modes and to have a good conversation with a friend, of which you can join us. It's almost like, you know, if you've come to join us at the whiskey bar and you're sitting with us and we're having a good old conversation, but you've lost your voice or something, or you're in an introverted mood, but you're just having fun hanging out. That's the vibe of the next episode that's coming. And I'm hoping to do more of that. So, yeah. So, I wish, by the way, I'm not really well versed in the decentralized social media web yet. I'm just getting started on ActivityPub. I'm not much of a short form person, as you can probably tell. But I do think there's something here, something worth paying attention to if we're going to keep our wits about us and not become subject to the homogenizing effects of centralized media. All right, that's it for me. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you soon.